The Security Service, MI5, and the Secret Intelligence Service, SIS or MI6, began operations in October 1909 as a single organization, the Secret Service Bureau, based in premises rented by a private detective, retired Chief Inspector Edward Tricky Drew, at 64 Victoria Street, London, SW1, opposite the Army and Navy stores. The Bureau was staffed initially by only two officers, the 50-year-old Commander Mansfield Cumming, RN, and an Army captain 14 years his junior, Vernon Kell, who met for the first time on 4th of October when, according to Cumming's diary, they had a yarn over the future and agreed to work together for the success of the cause. Cumming and Kell later parted company to become the first heads of respectively SIS and MI5. For several months, however, they were based in the same room, struggling, with minimal resources, to deal both with espionage in this country and with our foreign agents abroad. The Secret Service Bureau owed its foundation to the recommendations of a subcommittee of the Committee of Imperial Defense, the Chief Defense Planning Council of the Realm, which had been instructed in March 1909 by the Liberal government of Herbert Asquith to consider the nature and extent of foreign espionage that is at present taking place within this country and the danger to which it may expose us. It reported on 24th of July, "The evidence which was produced left no doubt in the minds of the subcommittee that an extensive system of German espionage exists in this country, and that we have no organization for keeping in touch with that espionage and for accurately determining its extent or objectives." Most continental high commands would have been surprised to discover that British intelligence was in such an enfeebled state. There was a widespread myth that, ever since the days when a secret service run by Queen Elizabeth I's Secretary of State, Sir Francis Walsingham, had successfully uncovered a number of Catholic plots, British intelligence, like the British Empire, had grown steadily in size and influence, spreading its tentacles across the globe. The myth was encouraged by Edwardian spy novelists. The most prolific and successful of them, William Le Queux, allegedly Queen Alexandra's favourite novelist, assured his readers, "The British Secret Service, although never so prominently before the public as those unscrupulous agents provocateurs of France and Russia, is nevertheless equally active. It works in silence and secrecy, yet many are its successful counterplots against the machinations of England's enemies." Le Queux was a Walter Mitty figure who fantasized that he had played a personal part in some of these successes. In Secrets of the Foreign Office, published in 1903, Le Queux, thinly disguised as Duckworth Drew, secret agent in the employ of the Foreign Office and next to His Majesty's Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, one of the most powerful and important pillars of England's supremacy, quickly gets the better of the long-serving French Foreign Minister, Théophile Delcasse, equally thinly disguised as Monsieur Delanne. Delcasse, alias Delanne, admitted that he longed to smoke one of my excellent light-coloured Corona Superbos, but there was more to Drew's cigars than met the minister's inattentive eye. To this day, Monsieur le Ministre is in ignorance that that particular Corona had been carefully prepared by me with a solution of Cocculus Indicus. Outwitted by the cunningly prepared Corona, the disoriented Delanne revealed the secrets Drew, sometimes considered an Edwardian prototype of James Bond, had come to collect. Such fantasies found a ready market. Like Thomas Hardy and H.G. Wells, both vastly superior writers, Le Queux was paid the top rate of 12 guineas per 1,000 words and published far more than either. At the opposite extreme of literary merit from Le Queux, Rudyard Kipling gave an equally optimistic assessment of British successes in the intelligence duel with Russia on India's northwest frontier. In Kim, probably the finest of all spy novels, though it transcends the world of espionage, unseen but ubiquitous agents of the British Raj play the great game that never ceases day and night throughout India, and they do so with a subtlety quite beyond the capacity of Tsarist Russia, the dread power of the North, and its French ally whose emissaries are smitten helpless. So far as the War Office were concerned, the myth of a far-flung intelligence network, whether promulgated by Kipling or by lesser literary talents, had the incidental advantage of avoiding public revelation of British intelligence weakness. The only consolation, they concluded in 1907, is that every foreign government implicitly believes that we already have a thoroughly organized and efficient European secret service. All that Britain actually had were small and underfunded military and naval intelligence departments, both with little capacity to collect secret intelligence, and the Metropolitan Police Special Branch, MPSB, founded in 1883 to counter the threat to the capital from Fenian, Irish Republican terrorism, which had moved on to small-scale investigation of other terrorist and subversive threats, but had minimal expertise in counter-espionage. The three agencies had little influence in Whitehall. Spencer Wilkinson, first Chicherley Professor of War at Oxford University, compared the War Office's use of their intelligence department, ID, during the Boer War, 1899 to 1902, to a man who kept a small brain for occasional use in his waistcoat pocket and ran his head by clockwork. Although the 1903 Royal Commission on the War in South Africa concluded that the ID had been undermanned for the work of preparation for a great war, once the war was over, the pressure for intelligence reform and more resources declined. Within the Directorate of Military Operations at the War Office, however, two diminutive departments, MO2 and MO3, were established in 1903 with responsibility for, respectively, foreign intelligence and counter-espionage. MO3 was the direct predecessor of MI5. Superintendent William Melville, who had been head of the Met's special branch for the previous decade, was recruited to carry out secret investigations for both MO2 and MO3, later becoming chief detective of the Security Service during its first 8 years. Since he qualified for a police pension of £240 and received an additional £400 from the War Office, the terms were financially attractive. Melville's appointment was not publicly announced. Officially, he simply retired from the special branch. The Times reported that Scotland Yard had lost the services of the most celebrated detective of the day.